May it please the court, counsel. My name is Spencer Wilson. I'm the attorney for Rodrigo Ortega. This is his appeal from a denial of an evidentiary hearing and a dismissal of his motion for post-conviction relief out of Dakota County. He was convicted at trial of 3 counts, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, subsequent offense, attempted assault of an officer in the third degree, and possession of methamphetamine with habitual criminal enhancement. His post-conviction relief motion is based on a Sixth Amendment claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. There's an underlying Fourth Amendment claim that is underlying in this case. The Sixth Amendment claim of ineffective assistance of counsel is based on the case law Strickland versus Washington, which is a two-prong test we've adopted in Nebraska, State versus Minor and State versus Krause. The first prong is that counsel's performance was deficient. Under this prong, the state doesn't actually address this prong of the test, so we submit that it was deficient. Furthermore, we can see from the Nebraska Supreme Court decision, State versus Ortega, S14782, which was his direct appeal, that the court held in that case that the Fourth Amendment claims were not preserved because counsel failed to object at trial to evidence of a firearm and the methamphetamine. So that was the deficiency in this case. The next prong is that it prejudiced the defendant's case. And this is really the key of what I want to highlight for you today, is this Kimmelman versus Morrison quote in my reply brief, where it states, where defense counsel's failure to litigate a Fourth Amendment claim confidently is the principal allegation of ineffectiveness, the defendant must also prove that his Fourth Amendment claim is meritorious. So that's what we're here today, to show you that the Fourth Amendment claim is meritorious. Because if it is, then there was the ineffectiveness. Meritorious is defined under Black's Law Dictionary as having a basis in law and fact, not frivolous. So we're not asking the court today to decide whether the Fourth Amendment claim is going to be successful or prevail, just that it has a basis in law and fact, and that it's not a frivolous claim. Moving into that, now we should jump into the Fourth Amendment claim. The first part of the Fourth Amendment claim is based on this unlawful stop. There's no reasonable suspicion in this case to initiate the stop. The state argues that there is, based on these two eyewitness phone calls who call in. However, eyewitnesses in Nebraska are only reliable when they give a detailed eyewitness report of a crime or the eyewitness personally observed the commission of a crime. That's State versus Pickenpah and State versus Landers that I cite in my brief. In this case here, we have two eyewitness phone calls. Neither eyewitness is reporting a crime that they're witnessing. Furthermore, they're not giving details sufficient to be accurate. They're not even giving details that match Ortega or his vehicle. What they're reporting is a small black sports car with a spoiler driven by a white male. In this case, Ortega is a Hispanic male, and he's driving a blue four-door Chevy Impala. So he's driving something completely different, and again, the eyewitnesses are not reporting the crime. Furthermore, there's no reasonable suspicion or probable cause for a traffic stop in this case. No traffic violation occurred. Ortega's driving down a residential street. There's no marked center line. And the Exhibit 8 is a cruiser cam video. Ortega never actually crosses the center line in the video. He's driving very reasonable under the circumstances. The only evidence of a traffic violation is one officer, Officer Orduna, testifies that Ortega was left the center for about 50 feet. And that really brings us to the State versus Aw case that was decided in Nebraska, where a driver was touching a center line for several hundred feet, and the court decided in that case that that did not create reasonable suspicion for a traffic violation. So that case, a few hundred feet, our case, the video doesn't show a crossing line. There is the officer that testified, but it's only 50 feet, much, much less than that case. So really what this is a pretextual stop, which is unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. There's 3 key facts I want to point out to you on why this is a pretextual stop in order to search. The first is we have Officer Orduna, who's the officer who pulls over Ortega. He testifies at trial in the motion to suppress that, quote, I'm going to find my own probable cause to pull over Ortega. He's going to find his own cause. He wants to pull over Ortega in this case. The second fact that supports this contention is the fact that or Duno, Officer Duno receives a phone call from an Iowa investigator, Investigator Litro, about Ortega, and then sends out an email to all of the South Sioux City County Police Department about Ortega less than an hour before stopping Ortega. He's already got Ortega on his mind. He knows he's looking for this guy and wants to find him and pull him over. And finally, after Ortega is detained, what's the first thing that Officer Orduno does? He calls the Iowa investigator. He calls Investigator Litro to the scene. He shows up within an hour with other Iowa police officers. So really, this is a pretextual stop. It's a stop to detain Ortega and a search for evidence related to this Iowa incident. Therefore, it's unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. That brings me to the search itself. This is an unlawful search. The state cites two exceptions, the automobile exception and then the inventory search exception. The automobile exception, I'll point out, State versus Neely, that I cited in my brief. In order to have a valid automobile exception, the searching officer must have probable cause to believe the vehicle contains contraband, and that there must be a possibility that the suspect take himself and the evidence in the vehicle out of the jurisdiction before a warrant can be obtained. Neither of those circumstances are present in this case. Ortega is being stopped and arrested for driving under suspension. There's no contraband in the car that's going to relate to driving under the suspension. And furthermore, the vehicle isn't mobile at the time to do the search. The vehicle's parked in a residential driveway. There's a house right in front of it. There's two police cruisers behind it. It can't back out. It can't go forward. And at the time of the search, Ortega's in handcuffs. He's in the back of a police cruiser. The passenger, De La Rosa, is also in handcuffs in the back of the other police cruiser. That vehicle's not going anywhere. There's no reason why the police couldn't get a search warrant in this case. So the automobile exception is not present here. The second exception that the state argues is that there's a valid inventory search. Again, under State versus Neely, we know that in order to have an inventory search to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment, when it's conducted pursuant to any standard inventory procedures. An inventory search must not be a ruse for general rummaging in order to discover incriminating evidence. The facts here are we have four police officers who testify at trial, Grace, Orduna, Nelson, and Backman. They're all from the South Sioux City Police Department. None of them testify to the same standard procedures. And in fact, there is no written standard procedure of the South Sioux City Police Department when it comes to doing an inventory search. Backman actually testifies, I'm not doing an inventory search, I'm searching for evidence. And it's after Backman searches for evidence that Officer Grace is the one who actually fills out the inventory search that you would do and give a copy to the towing company. However, all copies of that were lost before the suppression hearing. So we don't actually have an inventory search checklist that Officer Grace does. And really, the most damning piece of evidence on why this isn't an inventory search and isn't an investigatory search is they called those Iowa officers over from Iowa. Those Iowa officers are over here. They're looking for evidence for their case. They're taking pictures. They're searching the car. If this was just an inventory search, that we're going to inventory the car, give it to the towing company, here's the inventory, and pound it, you don't need the Iowa officers.
Well, I got to stop you for a second. Yeah. I get all of this goes to why you think he's deficient in not objecting to this evidence at trial.
Right.
But you even pointed out in your oral argument there's a second problem with this, which is you have to demonstrate that there's prejudice.
Right.
And also, you have to plead exactly what that prejudice was to your client. Isn't that what the court found here? The court said that there's, you didn't plead anything with respect to how this prejudiced you. Isn't that what the finding is, and how is that wrong?
Well, the Supreme Court doesn't get into the prejudice. They just say we can't get into the merit because these claims weren't preserved for trial. And so my argument on why there's prejudice is, look, there's prejudice both at the trial level because there was a motion to suppress file. And when you don't renew your motion to suppress at trial, that gives up your chance to keep that evidence out. That prejudice is your defendant at trial.
Post-conviction, is there any allegation of prejudice?
Yeah, that is the allegation of prejudice.
That's the allegation of deficient performance.
But it also goes to the prejudice, because he's prejudiced at trial, because now that evidence comes in and there's nothing to keep it out. And then the prejudice goes also up on appeal because now those aren't preserved for appeal. That is the prejudice. It's the deficient performance and And prejudice, I guess.
For prejudice, don't you have to show the outcome would have been different?
Yeah, so I guess the outcome would have been different because if he could successfully litigate the Fourth Amendment claims and they were successful, then the evidence of the firearm and the methamphetamine wouldn't have come in, and therefore you can't convict him of possession of a firearm or methamphetamine.
Do you believe that?
In this post-condition relief? Yes. Although Orduna did the motion, or not Orduna, Ortega led his own motion, which was, I think, a 70-page motion, so I mostly wrote the brief and the errors. I believe it would be insufficient. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you.
The police report, Daniel List, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the athletes in Nebraska. The state maintains that the latest post-conviction motion was properly denied by the ministerial period. After the formals, I set forth in the brief, Mr. Ortega has failed to provide sufficient allegations of prejudice. His post-conviction motion arguably failed to provide sufficient allegations that the district court concluded, but the clearer and more definite deficiency in our view is his appellate brief to this court, as assigned and argued. His brief to this court provides no discussion whatsoever as to which claim or claims for the motion to suppress would have been meritorious or why. That argument and that analysis wasn't provided in the district library, which is insufficient to present a claim on appeal. This is well established that a reply brief can't be used to his claims that weren't assigned and argued in an opening brief. So we maintain that he's failed to provide sufficient allegations of prejudice and his ineffective assistance of counsel claim. Just briefly, on the same point, this case is virtually identical to what was dealt with the state inside, where this court found the defendant's ineffective assistance of counsel claims regarding the failure to preserve the motion to suppress the trial were not sufficient to assign and argue on appeal and therefore not properly presented and not reviewed. The same rationale applies here in our view. If this court finds that one or more claims have been properly presented, we submit that the post-conviction motion is nonetheless properly denied because the motion to suppress lacked merit and was properly denied for the reasons set forth in our brief. I'm not going to rehash all the claims and responses. My argument today was exactly what's in the briefs, and my responses would be as well. I entertain any questions you have, but I don't want to waste your time by saying the same thing I've already said in the brief. So if there are no questions, as far as the merits,
can you just address the having the Iowa investigators to Nebraska? Can you address that issue?
Just as far as the notion that provided the pretextual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from the Fourth Amendment standpoint, it's beyond well established that pretext doesn't matter, subjective intentions don't matter, as long as there is a factual basis for the action taken, whether it's a search or seizure, subjective intentions just playing a part, and basically don't care, for lack of a better phrase. But on top of that, I guess I would say that to the extent, as the appellant's alleging, that all of this was taken into account and they knew all this all along and Orduna had all of this in mind as he was stopping Ortega, well, then that gave him a basis to do so. That actually bodes in the state's favor here, because if you're sitting here thinking this is Ortega, was wanted in a shooting from just days earlier, this is the guy, he's the gang member, the town gang member, well, then stop. You got a basis to do so, you got an arguably basis to arrest him for his involvement in the shooting. So if all of that, Orduna testified that he had not put two and two together, so the record reflects that that's not what he was thinking, because if he had, that would have actually bolstered his basis for the stop, but his testimony was that I didn't put two and two together at that time. I didn't think this was okay. But if he had, you know, we would actually not get stronger than just showing up based on just the anonymous callers and the suspicious vehicle in the neighborhood. If you took that coupled with, well, I think this is Ortega, he's a dangerous dude, and we got even more to work with, in which case it would be even better for us. But anyway, we given that he didn't know that, I just don't think the package in here.
Well, the district court didn't analyze any of that here. Is that right? I mean, the district court's not looking back at this and saying, you know, had you made this objection, wouldn't have mattered anyway because that wasn't the analysis. The analysis was you didn't even plead prejudice in this particular case. Isn't that the simple basis upon which the court said we're not going to have an evidentiary hearing and get into the merits of the deficiency?
Well, Yeah, additional confidence in sufficient pleading.
Right, and so when you argue today that you agree it was insufficiently prejudiced, that there was no prejudice, what do you mean by that specifically to us? Do you mean that he hasn't shown how that matters?
Yes, I mean, to plead a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, you've got to plead deficient performance and prejudice. And when you're pleading prejudice, especially in the context of post-conviction, where you do have a permanent pleading requirements, yeah, it's important to allege facts which, if shown to be true, would show that there's a reasonable probability that the result of the proceeding would have been different if you don't have that claim been raised. So in this context, you'd have to show facts which, if shown to be true, would have resulted in basically, or at least the suppression motion would have been granted, had these claims, well, they were raised, they were raised in the suppression motion, but had that been preserved and then raised on appeal, that the Supreme Court would agree and found that one or more of those claims had merit, the motion of suppression should have been granted, and that evidence should have been suppressed. Without those allegations...
I just want to allege that, just simply saying, had the motion to suppress been preserved, it would have been granted. Is that enough in a post-conviction motion?
Probably. And, I mean, the question here in that regard will be, is it enough? Because all that we're taking into the motion was, he laid out all the, much like the Phelps brief, laid out all the points that I didn't renew it and alleged that's sufficient. And then his post-conviction motion says, and the meritorious claims would have been, and just literally just copied the bits, Phelps' brief from direct appeal. And then after that, just continues walking through an explanation of why it's sufficient, because, you know, both of these has to be preserved, and any attorney with ordinary training and skill would have known that if you didn't preserve this thing, you didn't, it's sufficient. So there was, I mean, the question before it was, is that good enough to just copy and paste somebody else's brief that lays it all out?
Is the language that says these are the meritorious claims, is that enough to say they had merit, they would have been, the motion would have been granted?
Perhaps. I mean, it's close. I'm kind of conflicted on it myself. It kind of feels off for him to have alleged it in this way, but at the same time, if you take that assertion coupled with, you know, the verbatim arguments from Mr. Lancaster's brief on direct appeal, which was long and thorough, and does contain an analysis of both deficient performance and prejudice, you know, I mean, you could arguably say that's good enough. I don't know. Honestly, yes, I don't know. It's kind of a, I don't know how to, I've never seen that before. It's unique, and it's, I guess you could conclude it's sufficient. I don't necessarily, I don't really take issue with the district court's conclusion. I don't blame the, especially with a motion this size and this number of claims, I don't blame the district court for saying this is insufficient to play. So I hesitate to roll over and say the district court was wrong. But in any event, even if you were to say that what Ortega did here is adequate in the post-conviction motion, I still think the appellate brief fails. I'm all for it, but we'll be dealt with it inside. And I just don't see any basis that this case would be treated any differently. We'll be dealt with there. If there are other questions or anything on the merits, it's not a matter of asking for the judgment of the district court.
Thank you. The appellant was out of time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Case is submitted. Counsel is excused. Thank you for coming.